right. Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Deb.
Wow. Hi, everybody. My name is Deb West, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Deb.
I came here from Lancaster, California, and I don't know if anybody knows where that is, but woo! Shout out to the desert. Yeah. I want to thank Sandra for asking me to come out here and speak. Sandra's my sister-in-law, and I don't want to get emotional yet, so just save that for later. My sobriety date is March 2nd, 1990, and I just celebrated 27 years sobriety. Days, nights, weekends. It's a long time. A long fucking time. I'm a real alcoholic, and you know, I love that you read all of that on chapter 3. What an amazing thing to know. Like, if you're anything like me, like, I tried so many times to stop drinking. I was raised in a family of alcoholics. Extended families, aunts, uncles, blah, blah, blah. Everyone was always drunk. So, I mean, that's not why I'm an alcoholic. I just need you to know where I came from. So before I took a drink, I was already batshit crazy, okay? Because at a certain time on Christmas Eve, the uncle was beating the aunt and the little kids are crying and everybody's outside and I'm just worried about whether or not Santa Claus is going to get to my house because I'm not asleep. So there was a constant tension of panic and fear in me. And I would say that panic and fear was so bad by the time I picked up a drink that I wish somebody would have put it in my bottle when I was a baby. But that's just me. My mom passed away about 5 years ago, or maybe seven, with 31 years of sobriety. So I forget to say that. Alcoholics Anonymous saved her life, and sometimes I forget to say that. So love you, Mom. She left the planet clean and sober, and that's what I hope to do. I was in the third grade. I walked to my elementary school, and we decided to have a dance at my very good girlfriend's house, and I decided to take Canadian Lord Calvert whiskey. Now, I don't know if any of you have drank Canadian Lord Calvert whiskey, and if you have, I don't know why. Because it tastes like turpentine, smells like turpentine. It goes down really hard, but when it hits your gut, you grow tall and your tits are really big and your hair is blonde. And I don't give a shit that you're in the third grade, okay? There was a little issue because I remember I told you I was from an alcoholic household and I couldn't find the lid to the Tupperware, so I used foil. So I spilled it all over myself and walked into the party. And when I got to the party, no one else wanted any, so I drank it all. Now, I don't think that mother of that girl ever spoke to me again. When I was about 5 years sober, I saw her working in a store, and I was able to make an amends, which was super awesome. But I puked all over that garage, over everyone that was there. I was a blackout drinker from the very first time I ever swallowed alcohol. But what I knew one thing when I woke up in my own puke and piss in my shoes was that I could not wait to do that again. Because after I took a drink of that alcohol, I didn't feel a damn thing, not one thing. I didn't care. I didn't care that they were drunk. I didn't care that the kids were crying. I didn't care that no one was home. I didn't care. And that's really the goal of the whole rest of my drinking, was because I didn't want to care. And I'm happy to say today I have feelings. And I'm happy to say today that I feel them. But throughout my life, I was just trying to do anything to get rid of anything that was uncomfortable. Anything. It didn't matter. So after that drink, of course, I couldn't be a daily drinker because I'm only in the third grade. But what I did do was at any point and any time, we would get high. We would smoke weed. We would steal booze. My mom had a lot of Valium. She had cigarettes. I mean, I had it. Like, you didn't want me to come to the party because really at the end of my drinking and using, I would always cry like a pathetic girl and tell you, we're going to die. Everyone's going to die. And I really meant it. I had that much conviction, but you always invited me to the party because I had the shit. I had the stuff. And I always had it from the day I started till the day I was done. I had it. Whatever you need, whatever you want. Because I had to make sure that I could hold you hostage and that you would be my friend. Because if you weren't, then what did I have? I grew up in the 80s. Woo! Shout out to the 80s. I drank in bars. And I had I have pictures to prove it too. My hair was probably about 4 inches above my head and long. And I don't know about any of you in this generation, but in that generation, the best hair always won. And I had it. I had a perm for days. I had 3-inch stilettos that were purple velvet. I went to the tanning bed probably every single day because I didn't want you to know how I was always drunk and loaded. And it was on and cracking, and I had to go to the bar. I had to go to the bar. There was no choice left. I had to go to the bar. Every single thing that's in my story and every place I stopped on that night, on certain particular nights, is not there anymore in my city. Because I don't know about your city, but in my city, everything is changing. They're tearing stuff down. They're building stuff up. And everything that I, even Civil Brand Institution, I spent some time in there. Woo! Shout out for Civil Brand. It ain't there no more. Okay? It's some man, it's the boys go there. Maybe it's called Twin Towers. I don't know. But all the girls went somewhere else. But I went there. Okay? I have this compulsion when I drink, and it's to drive. And it's really not safe for you, your family, anybody, me, my family, whatever. At 16 years old, I got my driver's license, and I had a baby. And I don't know, today, they've got TV shows about that shit, and they're making so much money. Back then, it was shocking and appalling. Everybody was, oh my God, she's only 16, da 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 da. Well, I didn't know how I got pregnant. Yeah. Okay? I didn't want to get pregnant. I just did. I had this little boy and I drug him all the places that we drag little children in our addiction. And I had a job and a car and big hair, a tan. I mean, I was on and cracking. And one night I was headed to the bar and I got pulled over by the police, by the popo. And I know I'm skipping a lot of drunkalog, and forgive me, I skip around, so just rock with me, roll with me, just go with it. But anyways, I got pulled over by the police, and I was in those stilettos that I told you about. My hair was rocking high. I was in a miniskirt. And the only problem with that was it was February. And I don't know how what the temperature is here in February, but in Lancaster, it is freaking cold. And that cop had on, like, one of those hats with the ears. And I'm standing out there going, hey, officer, what up? And he's like, yeah, I'm going to need you to take so many steps forward, so many steps back. And what I did was, like, if he told me to take 5, I would take 6 just to be sure that he knew that I understood what he was saying. And that's really not the point. Like, you're supposed to follow direction. And so I went to jail for the first time. Now, I need you to know that before this happened, I would try to quit drinking and using. I would try so hard. I would try all these ways. I would try drinking wine only, drinking beer only, not drinking on the weekends, only drinking at the bar, not drinking at the bar. I mean, the people at the bar were like, and Mothers Against Drunk Drivers was a big deal at this time. Like, I think they're a big deal now, but it was huge back then. I mean, I had so many friends that were going to jail and doing a lot of time for, you know, being drunk driving. So I had tried so many times to quit drinking, so now I'm like, well, shit. You know, and before I was leaving the bar when I got pulled over, and I had this, like, Dodge Daytona. I don't even know what year it is, which is a cardinal sin if you're my husband, but I don't know the year of it. But it was really fast. It had a turbo engine, and it was blue and this and that. And my girlfriend was with me, and I got pulled over. And so when I got out of jail, when you go into the jail cell, if any of you have ever had this happen to you, you feel like you look good. And I did. Okay? I am rocking into that jail cell. Okay? Once it closes and the mind starts going and you can't go to sleep because you did a couple lines in the morning when you get out and you have hair like that, one side of your hair is smashed to your head and the other side is beautifully perfect and you're in those heels. And that miniskirt, I don't know about anyone else, but that was for me, like, it started to be my demise. Like, it was really truly who I was. The person that I dressed up to be was someone else. And I was getting sicker and sicker and sicker. I got rid of that car because it was the problem. And damn fucking car. Should have never had that car. It was way too fast for me. Got a brand new truck. 2 weeks later, I go up to Mammoth, California. Everything's on and cracking. I got the goods. We're skiing. We had ski poles that had peppermint schnapps in them. Like, do you feel me? Like, we're skiing down the hill and looking good. I had, like, all this bright pink, you know, hat and gloves and skiing all day, get off the slopes, go back, take a shower, have a coffee, you know, Bailey's and coffee, leave there, go to a bar, meet a couple guys, have a couple beers at the bar, and head back to the ski place where is the only place that's showing the Mike Tyson fight with these two guys. And I mean, back in those days, people, no one missed a Mike Tyson fight, right? I mean, come on. He was the king. He was the guy. I mean, this was before he, like, bit off ears and stuff. I mean, he was, like, the shit. So we get up there. Everybody's there. Everybody's partying. We all order a Mexican flag. And if you don't know what that is, it's layers of alcohol with different colors, and they light it on fire, and you blow it out and take the shot. And the lady came, and the fires were going, and the people were there, and the guy was there, and they hand us the Mexican flag. I blow out the fire, I take the shot, and the next thing I know, I am mad as hell, and I'm headed out to my vehicle, dragging my girlfriend. Getting the fuck out of there for some reason. So something happened. And what I realized later is that fight only lasted like 2 minutes. You can look it up. It was February of 1989 that this happened, okay? So that fight only lasted like 2 minutes, what I realized later. But something happened within that 2 minutes, and I don't remember, okay? But what I do know is that I think that guy that was supposed to be with me told me he had a girlfriend or a wife or something. And I don't know, if you're an alcoholic like me, that makes you just want to whip somebody's ass right there. Because your girlfriend's over there making out with Mr. Hot, and you're sitting here playing tiddlywinks with the guy who has a girlfriend. So, I mean, my emotions were out of control, I was out of control, and we're headed to the car, and I'm getting ready to fly down that mountain. And I get in that car, and I don't put my seatbelt on, and she does. And mind you, my girlfriend is the same girlfriend that I just got pulled over with 2 weeks ago, okay? She's my hostage. And she had been my hostage at that point since second grade, people. Best friends. We were best friends. So I head down the mountain. I lose control. I remember nothing. I go over the side of the embankment. If you've ever been to Mammoth, it was hundreds and hundreds of feet. I finally hit a tree, and the tree stops me from continuing to roll down this hill. And for some reason, she didn't have her seatbelt on. She's thrown from the vehicle. And so I'm in the car, and I have my seatbelt on, and I'm drowning because my ribs are broken, and they've punctured my lung, and I don't know any of this because I'm in a blackout. And the next thing I know, I'm being woke up. Okay, P.S., like came to this beautiful black woman police officer, saying, "Deborah, you know, I'm officer so-and-so, and you're under arrest for felony drunk driving, and your mom's here, and when you get up out of here, you're going to come to the station, and I'm going to book you, and then I'm going to release you to your mom's care." And I'm like, "What? Are you kidding me right now?" No. All of a sudden, I start to feel my body. I realize I'm in the hospital. And the one thing that I'm okay, there's two thoughts that I have. Number one, I've lied completely to my son. Like, he's 9 years old. I always lied to him, like, all 9 years. Number one, the first thought I thought was, I wonder why I lived. And the second thought I thought, was that girl dead? My very best friend, was she dead? And at first they wouldn't talk to me about her, and then they decided to tell me that she had lived. And that she was in the room next door, and she had a broken femur. And the only reason I was alive was because she was thrown from the vehicle, and she crawled up to the road and flagged down a car, and that happened to be the wife of a paramedic who had a radio. Okay? Now, I don't know about anybody else, but I don't even know about anybody else. It doesn't matter. But I'm alive, and I'm alive because of that situation. And today, I know that that wasn't a coincidence. At the time, I didn't really understand why I lived. But today, I know that I lived for all of you. That's what I know. And I'm here because I need to represent the idea that you can get and stay sober. If it's something that you need to do, you can. It works. This program works. So I get out of the hospital. I go back home. My life is over. I'm in jail in my mind. I don't know how your mind works, but I got K-Fuck radio going on. Like, good morning. I'm glad you're awake. We've got some shit to work out. I don't know what the fuck you were thinking about last night, but we got to stop that shit. You know, I mean, like, I don't even have my feet on the floor yet, okay? And I'm like, whoa, everyone needs to slow down, man. I got to get a cup of coffee first. And then whoever they are, they talk a lot. There's a committee, and they just chatter amongst themselves. And my sponsor used to tell me, you know, Deb, you need to picture a stop sign when you're in the shower and feel the water on your body. Stop being in your head. But I didn't know how to do that when I was new. So if you're struggling with that, you know, it will pass. So in the whole year of 1989, I was in prison in my mind. I ended up getting, my mom bought me an attorney. I got tried on the second felony one first, and then I went back to my city and got tried on the DUI, and I went to jail for that. In the meantime, I was sent to drug diversion classes, where I learned a lot about, like, that a vehicle is a weapon, and that if you're driving a vehicle and you're intoxicated, any kind of vehicle, as my son so graciously would remind me, a Wave Runner, automobile, anything that has a motor, you're driving a weapon. So I started learning all that. I started learning about myself, a little bit about myself. My drug of choice, I'm a cocaine, marijuana, and alcohol person. That's what I am. I start with smoking a little weed, then, you know, have a drink, and the next thing you know, we got to get some coke, and let's go. Woo! It's on and cracking. Cracking all night long. Till it's time to get up and go to work, and then I'm crying because I don't want to face reality. So this year I can't get sober and I can't get drunk. I'm going to churches, sanitariums, taking a trip, not taking a trip, just trying anything in my power to get some relief. And at this point, I don't know I'm an alcoholic. Now, I want to tell you that, remember I told you that woman had 31 years when she died? There were pamphlets and big books all over my living room. Okay? And I didn't know I was an alcoholic. And that's the God's honest truth. If you're here and you don't even know if you're an alcoholic, hey, I got you. I feel you. I'm totally, that's my story. And I would think, oh, Mary Lou left her book. God, these people always, oh, Tom forgot his pamphlets. You know, I mean, I didn't think about looking at them. They weren't my pamphlets. It wasn't my book. I would return it to them and say, wow, you left this at my house, you know. And then they'd all laugh and think, wow, she really doesn't get it. And I didn't. On the way to Sybil Brand Institution, I had a thought. and this was a life-changing thought. I thought, you know what, Deb? You never go to jail. You never screw other people's boyfriends. You never take your clothes off in public. You never offend everybody in the room when you're sober. But when you're drunk, it's most likely that you're going to do one or all of those things. That was my thought. In my opinion, my original thought. Okay? I didn't know, like I said, I did not know that you were all trying to get me sober. I didn't know that. So when I got down to the jail, they checked me in, and I was there a while, and I got called out on a work furlough program at Foxfield Airport, which was not, by the way, available to women in those days. I was the first woman, and now it is. And I've met a lot of girls in my community that do their time there. I did a month there, and I had to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I found my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting at the Palmdale Group on a Sunday night, which is where Sandra and was. She wasn't there that night, but I went there, and I went in the room, and I thought, well, I'm so glad I smoked that joint, because now I got to go to this meeting, and tomorrow morning I have drug diversion, so I've got it all handled. I'm stoned. I'm going to hit the meeting. Go to the drug diversion. What happened was I walked in the meeting. It was a podium meeting. And all these people were laughing, and they were having a great old time, you know. They were like, it seemed like they were all friends, everybody but me. I sat in the back. And in those days, everybody didn't glom onto you when you were new. So I thank God for that. You know, they gave me a minute. I'm not going to glom on to any of you people, but if any of you want to talk to me or have a question for me, I'm here for you. You know, people let me just come. A woman told me, hey, you know, I had $2 in my hand, and the woman said, hey, just put $1 in today and then come back tomorrow. And here's a book. This is the book that we read out of. It's called The Big Book. And I suggest that you read page blah, blah, blah. And I wrote down the pages in the book that I still have, and I did what she said. For the first time in my life, I did what someone said. And that's the God's honest truth. For the first time in my life, I'm an Aries. Okay, if you're an Aries, like, you don't tell us what to do. Nobody tells you. If you're an alcoholic, you don't tell us what to do. We suggest this shit. And if you ain't suggestion, I got nothing to say to you. You know, if you're telling me what to do, it's not going to work. So I went home that night and I read the book. Wow. I picked up that book and I read the book and I thought, oh my God, they're following me. How could this be possible? How could all of you have said you only had 2 beers? Like, I said I only had 2 beers every time I got pulled over. I did not know that a lot of you did too. That was just fucking blowing my mind. There was other things. Now, but at this point, I'm 25 years old when I found Alcoholics Anonymous, by the way. I'm 25 years old. I can't get drunk. I can't get sober. I'm going to the bar. My friend works at the bar. It's, you know, I'm probably going to, I think it's the Casa Roma. It's an Italian restaurant. He works at the bar. And I go in the bar and I order, I used to drink Tanqueray and tonic and gin. I'm a gin girl. And so I'd go in there and I'd order, and I'd go in and he'd be like, roll his eyes. Hi, Deb. And I'd be like, hey, I need a Tanqueray and tonic. He'd be like, okay. So by the third Tanqueray and tonic, I'm leaning over the bar going, I'm going to die. But I can't get drunk. Okay? I've had 3 Tanqueray and tonics, and I'm not drunk. And he's like, listen, can you move down? This is an Italian restaurant. Just move down. You can cry down there, but shh. God, night after night of this pathetic, incomprehensible, like, get a life, lady. Like, do something about yourself. If you guys wouldn't act like that, I wouldn't be so fucked up, you know? So I can't get drunk. I can't get sober. I don't know what is going to happen to me. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know I'm an alcoholic. I don't know there's a solution to my problem. I spent a lot of months in that misery, a lot of months. By the time I got here to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was so tired, you guys. I crawled in the room. I was so tired. And I didn't want to hold your hand at the Lord's Prayer either, because you did not know where I came from. You do not know the things that I did. I did not want you to know who I truly was, because if you knew who I truly was, you wouldn't even tell me to come back. You just wouldn't. So I went home, I started reading the book, and I found myself in there, and I realized that now, all of a sudden, you want me to believe in a God. And that's a problem. That's a real problem. Because, see, I have spent a lot of years running from God. And, you know, and the gods in my life, those alcoholic people, all they ever did was lie to me. I would walk out of my bedroom, I would see my mother bleeding, and I would say, "Why is my mom bleeding?" And they'd say, "She's not. Go back to your room." So I had this perception problem. I had a perception problem when I got here. There was so many other lies. So I had this perception problem. And the thing is that I didn't know if this was a trick. Like, I thought, like, you guys were going to eventually ask me for all my money or to take big books over to China. I mean, you know, I was always looking for the loophole. Like, what do you want? What do you want? And the people would go, like, "We don't want anything. We just love you. Keep coming back." And so I got a sponsor, and I told her, you know, like, "I can't do the God thing. I don't know about anyone else, but I just can't." And she'd say, "That's okay. Do you believe that I believe?" And I'd go, "Yeah." And she goes, "Well, then just believe in that. Do you believe that Jerry got a car when he just prayed for it and Mary Lou just happened to be selling it?" And I was like, "Yeah, I was there." She was like, "Okay, just believe in that." And she had me read Agnostics. And I don't know if you've read Agnostics in the big book, but we agnostics, I'm an agnostic person that believes in a higher power. But in that story on page 55, it tells you exactly where to find God, which is in every man and woman is a fundamental idea of God. And so I started to try to get a concept of that which I needed to put my dependence on. And things started to change. I wasn't drinking. My mom had taken me. I went to my mom's, of course. My poor mom. I'm a mom now, so I know. I'm a grandma. How about that? I was 25 when I got here, and I turned 26 years old on my 26th day of sobriety. And everybody used to go, like, "That is so cool." And I'd think, "Why is that cool?" And now, that is so cool. Like, do you have that? Because I'm unique. That's what makes me unique. I went to my mom's house one night. I had gone to a Tom Petty concert. March 1st of 1990, Tom Petty played at somewhere, which I can't remember. And the last act was like, I'm probably lying about this, but I feel like it was like Neil Young and Crazy Horse. I mean, it was like a whoa concert, right? But I can't stay in the concert because the booze is in the car and the drugs are in the car. And this chick I'm with keeps trying to get everybody to smoke off my joint, which is pissing me off. And I'm restless and irritable and discontent, and I can't sit in this concert anymore. And so out we go, me and my hostage. And we go to the beach. And I don't know if you've ever drank beer on the beach, but it is hard. You have sand in your nose, in your mouth, on your gums. And plus, if you're crying, you got fucking sand stuck all over your shirt. And I was. And she's just trying to have a good time because it's her birthday. And I'm like, "Fuck your birthday. I'm miserable, you know?" And so anyway, we go back to the city, and I have another new car, and I drive that car to my mom's house, and in the morning my mom takes me to see a doctor. And I go see this man, his name's John Blodgett. I don't know, this man is a very famous man. I don't even know how to tell you how many people in my community he helped get sober. He started a 6:30 a.m. modification group, which meets at the Grange Hall. It's still there to this day. He was a total pervert. Okay, so you either loved him or you hated him. Like, he never molested me. I mean, maybe he got some, you know, stared at my tits all the time. I don't care. He told me, "You know what, Deb, you're an alcoholic." And I said, "Well, I thought alcoholics had no teeth and a paper bag and were standing on the corner." And he was like, "No, alcoholics come in all shapes and sizes. You're an alcoholic and you need to do some time in detox. And I want you to go to the Palmdale Care Unit, which was called the Care Unit at that time. And I want you to spend, do the deal there, 28 days. And so I'm like, okay, I'll go. You've all seen Intervention, right? I'll go. So we leave the doctor's office. We go to my mom's house. I smoke some of this weed that I had, which is not like the weed that they have today, by the way. But it was good, some good shit, some Thai bud. And so I smoke some, and I'm stoned, and I'm thinking, well, I'm going to flush this because I don't want it anymore. I'm going to the rehab. Well, she had a water saver fucking toilet. So it just kept going down and coming right back up, right? Like, shit! That is my, you know what, they talk about regrets and sobriety, that's my one regret. Why didn't I smoke that shit? I could still see it on a bad day going up, but going down. Finally I said, you know, Mom, I tried to flush some shit down your toilet, it isn't going to go, let's go right now. If we don't go right now, I'm not going to go. I know me, I'm not going to go. I'm not that important. I don't really need to get sober. You're the problem. So we go to the care unit and I check myself in. The doctor's there. There's this huge meeting that Sandra's dad was at, which he's going to speak here at some point, and he'll tell you all about that meeting. It doesn't matter. It was a huge hospital, huge care unit. Deb's finally getting some help. I'm in there. They have this huge meeting that you go to. Remember I told you that meeting, and everybody's smoking. It's in the middle of a hospital. Like 200 people and everybody's smoking in a hospital. It was awesome. Like you couldn't even see through the haze. You know what I mean? And you knew you were at a fucking meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went in there and I sold tickets, 50-50 tickets. And, you know, I'm just like new and shit and the people that are new. And so I go back to the care unit and I go to sleep. And in the morning I wake up and they're washing the floors. And they're cleaning shit, and there's nobody that I went to sleep last. My counselor's gone. All the counselors are gone. And we're like, I mean, we're all impatient. Like, I had a roommate. We're like, where is everybody? They're like, oh, the care unit closed. And I swear to God, you look up the date of when did the care unit go away out of hospitals. There was a care unit in every hospital in those days, every hospital. We didn't have to fight to find detoxes. We didn't have to fight to, I mean, in my community, I fight along with the people to get help for you people. That's what we do. That's what I do with my whole life. Anyways, they're all gone. And they're like, they're gone. You have to go to the outpatient clinic. It's right down the street. And good luck. We hope you stay sober. And I'm like, what? Do you know who I am? Like, I said I'll go, and I'm fucking here, and you can't tell me that shit. And you know how we fight everything when we get here? Right. Well, we cease fighting everything. Anyway, I called up my doctor, and I'm like, where the hell is everybody? He's like, remember I told you he was a pervert, and all he did was fucking laugh at shit. This is so funny. You're going to laugh at it later. I'm like, this is not funny at all. There's not one funny thing about this. And you know what? I went to that outpatient care unit and I never relapsed. I am a person who has the very same sobriety date that I got from the day one. And I'm not saying that to be good or bad. I'm just telling you that I know relapse is a part of recovery, but it's not a part of mine. And it doesn't have to be a part of yours if you don't want it to. Yeah. And I don't smoke pot, too, by the way. That's huge to say. I'm clean and sober from the neck up for 27 years. Anyway, I got it. I got a sponsor. I got busy. I emptied ashtrays. I cleaned out trash. I did everything that I, all of a sudden I was just like, what do you want me to do? And you're like, go wash my car. And I was like, okay. You know what I mean? And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with me as I'm washing your car? But it didn't matter because you had time and sobriety and I didn't. And I wanted what you had. That's how bad I wanted it. I'm a teacher. I'm not a teacher right now, but in the past I've been a teacher. And I would say, like, I have a job application for blah, blah, blah. Who wants it? And the kids, you know, they were adults. I do. And I would just hold it up. And then nobody would move. They'd just be saying, I do. And I'd put it away. And the next night I'd do the same thing. Because if you don't get off your ass and come and get it, you ain't going to get it. I learned that. in Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned a lot of things here. I have to say that I went on to have two more kids. I met a guy, boy and girl mates meet on AA campus or whatever they say, which is a bunch of horse shit. Anyway, I've been married 25 years, which is huge because I don't do relationships. I went on to have two other kids, so now I have three. And I have a grandbaby, a grandson that's 3 years old, that I would write a check for every dime in my purse right now if I could and if it was important to him, because I love him that much. And that love, learning to love in that way, came from Alcoholics Anonymous. Because remember, I told you, I don't care about you or anybody else in, that you have to say. I don't care about what you have to say. And Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me the importance of carrying the message. And that's the only reason why I'm here tonight. This isn't my strong suit. I'm not a circus speaker, but I can be very funny. And I hope somebody laugh tonight, because sometimes I'm really serious and I cry the whole time. So you never know what's going to come out. Because see, I just ask God to direct my thinking. And I ask God what you might need to hear. And it's really not me. It's not me. I went on to school. I'm getting my bachelor's degree right now in sociology. And that's huge. When I got here, I was a high school dropout. I had no education. I got my GED at 32. And when I had my last baby, and then all this, when my mom was sick, I want to tell you just a tiny little bit about what you can accomplish if you stay. So my mom got sick, and I told you how much my mom meant to me. Like, if that didn't come through, I'm sorry, but that woman was, she would, like, if I would have killed someone, she would have buried the body and told the police to fuck off. I mean, Al-Anon never got my mom, never got her. If you were with me at the store, at Macy's, she would buy you a shirt just because you were with me. You know, she was just amazing. Anyway, she got really sick, and she was dropping everything, and she didn't tell me. And my mom was like that too, like, shh, don't tell Deb. Don't tell her, you know. And my girlfriend cleaned for her, and she would say, Deb, I got to tell you something. You know, I've been at your mom's a couple times, and there's some pills on the floor, and it just seems like something's not right. So I went over to my mom's, and I said, now, mind you, my mom had had lung cancer. She had a portion of her lungs removed, and that was about 2 years before that. She had had some heart trouble, too. But they gave her a clean bill of health and sent her home. Anyway, I went over there, and she said, yeah, I can't feel my fingers sometimes. And I said, well, you know, we need to go get that checked out. We'll make an appointment. She said, I can't feel my choir robe. She was like in this choir in this Lutheran church. She kept wanting me to come hear her sing, and I'm like, you know, Mom, I'll go on Christmas. You know, it's really not my thing. Anyway, she couldn't feel her choir robe. Long story short, she came to my house one Sunday out of the blue and had a seizure, and we called the paramedics, and it turned out she had a brain tumor. And from the time that we found out she had a brain tumor, it was 90 days till the day that she died in my home. And that was so fast, right? Yeah, it was so fast. But here's what Alcoholics Anonymous, by the time I even found out what was wrong, the people in Alcoholics Anonymous had had the whole entire room cleaned out. A hospital bed was being delivered. There was so much food and flowers and love and so much. Like, you are my family, you know. You are each other's family. Look around this room. If you stay, these are your people. And I kept on saying, like, okay, so Sandra's dad, his wife is a really good friend. We're family, right? And so I would say to her dad, I would see him in a meeting at Al-Anon, by the way. Like, if you have kids, you need Al-Anon, and you will. And if, maybe not now, but I haven't even went on about my daughter. I'm not even going to bore you about that shit. Oh, I shouldn't say that. I love you, because she might hear this. I love her so much. She is my joy and my light. And she gave me my grandson. Anyway, where was I? Help me. Right, what did I say, though, the last thing? Okay, A is my family. Got the hospital bed, blah, 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 I lost it. Anyway, I would say to Sandra's dad, so remember I saw him at the meeting, and I would say, I don't think I can do this. Like, how many times have you said that in sobriety? Like, I don't think I can do this. I don't think I can face all these crimes I've committed, or these tickets I have, or the money I owe, or the boy that didn't call me, or the girl that didn't call me, or, you know, any identity crisis that you're having. Like, how many times have you said that? I would say, I don't think I can do this. And he would like say, yeah, you can. Yes, you can. All of you would go, Deb, yes, you can. This is how you do it. You do it one day at a time, 1 second at a time, seconds and inches. If you're struggling with sobriety in this room, you know, that's okay. Call somebody. You know, sobriety for me, like if I would have gotten the life I thought I was going to get, I would have sold myself so short. I mean, look at me. I'm in, where am I? Visalia. Like, tomorrow I'm going to go to the very important big trees that you have here. Sequoias. You know, and I'm super excited about that. You know? I mean, shit, look at your view. I mean, I'm driving down the freeway. I'm like, oh my God, look at those mountains. They're covered in snow. Our mountains have 200% snowpack. Like, shout out to the Creator. Because, man, I'm telling you, we are dry in this state. Anyway, I'm having a hot flash. And that, you know, whatever. Sucks so bad. It's like having a fucking fire inside your body. And people are like, oh, just turn on a fan. You. No, I haven't done enough. I've bored all the children. Anyways, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love all of you, and I'm so glad that I got to come here and share. And, you know, just, I wish I had like a really cool thing to, you know, keep coming back. Thanks.